Well, I got to get those steps for my Fitbit, so. I admire people who are really good at what they do. Maybe they're piano players and they can play those special music pieces for us and the hymns. Maybe they're good at art, good at drawing, good at painting. They have very skilled in arts and crafts. I know we have a number of members in our congregation who have an excellent singing voice, and they really provide that, and they sing out during our Sabbath services. They're good at what they do, and that's something that we can all enjoy with them as we see their talent. But you know, some people really aren't, frankly, all that skilled. Take, for example, the man a few winters ago in the Pittsburgh area who robbed a taxi cab driver. Now, it was a winter night, and there were a couple of inches of fresh snow on the ground. You guessed it. All the police had to do was follow his footprints in the snow that led directly to his hideout, and they got him there with all of his loot. Probably someone who should be looking for a different career. But I only can guess that he must have learned something from that experience, that maybe the next time he holds up somebody, he'll plan it a little more carefully. There's a familiar statement that experience is the best teacher. And it certainly can be effective, but frankly, it's not always the best way to learn. An English author named Terry Pratchett made this comment. He said, "Wisdom comes from experience, and experience is often the result of a lack of wisdom." We can learn good lessons from our bad decisions, but there's got to be a better way. One definition we've been using recently for wisdom is to be skilled at life. But being skilled at life seems to be kind of a lost art or a lost skill in this age. Our society is truly coming off the rails because of ignorance, because of poor judgment, because of a lack of wisdom. There's confusion about genders, and who would have ever thought that would happen? There's anti-Semitism, which racks much of the nation and puts many people in danger. And there's increasing political division and even hatred between people with different political ideologies. You know, Paul warned the church in Philippi that they lived in a warped, crooked, and perverted age. And that was in 60 AD. How much more so today? Paul admonishes us to be skilled at life. He says in Ephesians 5, verse 15, to walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, because the days are evil. To navigate our way through this society and live in this age, we must have wisdom. We must be able to discern what is right, what is best, what is wrong, what to avoid, what to even think, and what to do. The New Living Translation translates this verse. It says to be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but live like those who are wise. So we make a lot of choices every day. And we decide how we're going to live, what we're going to do, what we're going to think. There's much that we need to be careful about so that we live as those who are wise. Verse 17 here in Ephesians 5 says, therefore, do not be unwise. As he continues the thought. You know, the Greek word that's translated unwise in that verse is very blunt and strong. Strong's concordance defines that Greek word as meaning mindless or stupid. So Paul was being pretty direct when he was addressing the church here. Don't be dumb. Don't be stupid. Don't be mindless. Live carefully. Walk circumspectly. We all know that we need to live wisely, but at the same time, it's important that we recognize that we should not assume that we have wisdom. It takes focus and it takes effort to continue to learn the skill of wisdom, and that effort continues throughout our entire lives. Let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs, the third chapter. We've had a couple of sermons in the last month or so on the general topic of wisdom, and we've gotten a lot of the scriptures and principles from here in the book of Proverbs. In chapter 3, I'm going to be reading from the New Revised Standard Version, beginning in verse 13. Proverbs 3, verse 13. Happy are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding. For her income is better than silver, and her revenue better than gold. She's more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Now, all of that is true. I think we'd accept that it's in Scripture, and it's true, and it's valid. But really, how much do people live valuing wisdom over physical treasure? Very few, I would say. You know, if wisdom were only more tangible, if it were a physical entity, people would be more inclined to pursue it. If it was something you could go to Walmart, you know, and go to the wisdom department and pick up a couple of boxes to take home. Or if you could order it online at Amazon and be on your front porch the next morning. How do you find wisdom? The Hebrew word translated find refers to the result of effort and diligence. Wisdom is not just something we stumble across. It is something that we specifically and actively pursue. The obvious implication is that we don't naturally have this wisdom. But God tells us that we need to find that wisdom, and we will if we diligently seek for it. The Hebrew word translated find implies to draw out. By analogy, it could be compared to a mining process, mining precious metals from the earth. You have to dig for them and refine them and work to make what looks like just a piece of rock come to its true value. The proverb here claims that what we gain through wisdom is more valuable than any physical treasure. Today we're going to continue discussing what we know about wisdom. We talked before about how we can grow in wisdom, that we grow in wisdom by our connection to God by His Holy Spirit. We grow in wisdom by having an open heart, an understanding heart, desiring to learn and being humble. We learn wisdom by obeying God. It creates in us a sense of understanding and wisdom. But how do we apply wisdom? How do we use wisdom? How do we exercise wisdom? The title of the sermon this afternoon is Applying Wisdom in Life. When we talk about wisdom, James chapter 1, verse 5 is always a good place to start. So let's go there. James, the first chapter, verse 5. James chapter 1, verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives all liberally and without reproach, and it shall be given to him. The expositor's commentary says that wisdom itself is a God-given understanding that enables a person to avoid the paths of wickedness and to live a life of righteousness. In other words, when we pray for wisdom, God will open our minds to understanding and show us the need to apply that to our lives. It says that He gives this blessing without reproach. That basically means that God doesn't hold anything against us when we ask for wisdom. It's not wrong, and God doesn't look down on us when we admit we don't have the wisdom that we need. He doesn't correct us or scold us, but rather, as this verse points out, He generously responds. He gives us all good things generously. Now we know that wisdom is not just a discrete, standalone quality. Scripture describes wisdom usually in at the same time, or part of it, of wisdom is understanding and knowledge and prudence. Prudence is the word we don't use often. It means sound judgment, making good decisions. A person who's prudent is thoughtful and makes careful and proper decisions, exercises sound judgment that guides our thoughts and our behavior. So we can ask God for wisdom, and he can open up our minds to receive wisdom. But wisdom is not something that God just funnels directly into our minds. It comes about as we find it, as we look for it, as we search for it, as we put effort into seeking wisdom. It is a special gift that only God can give. There are counterfeit forms of wisdom, but they're of no value, really. The wisdom that God provides is what is more valuable than anything physical. Let's go back and continue in Proverbs 3. We'll pick it up in verse 16. And again, I'll be reading from the New Revised Standard. Proverbs 3, verse 16. Speaking of wisdom, it says, "Long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness. All her paths are peace. She's a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. The Eternal, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew." Wisdom is what God possesses and by which he was able to create this incredible earth that we live on. The earth itself is an amazing creation, created by God, his power and his wisdom, his knowledge, his understanding. Wisdom, according to a man named Charles Spurgeon, who is a well-known 19th century Baptist preacher, I don't quote him often, but he made this statement, that wisdom is the right use of knowledge. God has ultimate wisdom and full and complete knowledge, and he combines those to fulfill his plan. Or as a man named Gene Kesselman stated, he's a successful insurance and technology entrepreneur, but he made this comment. He said, "Knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing you don't put tomato in fruit salad." So we can know things, but we have to know how to apply those things in our lives. And that's what God will help us to find. When we search for it, we will find that level of help so that we can make the proper decisions based on the knowledge that we have, the understanding that we're given. Wisdom is the application of those things that God shares with us. Continuing in verse 21 in Proverbs 3, it says, "My child, do not let these escape from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and prudence." And again, prudence means careful and thoughtful judgment, sound decision-making. It's based on that wisdom. And the Proverbs continue, "And they will be life for your soul and adornment for your neck." Good things result when we receive and use, apply that wisdom that God will lead us to. Then, verse 23, you will walk on your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. One with wisdom knows where he or she is going. They know what they need to do. They know how to deal with the challenges of life that they face. A wise person doesn't stumble at the little things in life or the decisions that have to be made. And wisdom gives us peace of mind. Peace is part of the product of the application of wisdom. We conclude this section in verse 23 and 24. You'll walk on your way securely. Your foot will not stumble. If you sit down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Wisdom is such a key element in our lives, and it offers so much to us, and it is certainly far more important. You know, wealthy people often are just miserable in their personal lives. What God provides for us through wisdom is something that will give us security, peace, direction in our lives. In this world today, what can be more important, really, than having those qualities, that understanding the direction, the purpose, and the security, and peace? So let's continue, again, asking, how does a person with wisdom behave? What is the result, or what do we see that is wisdom in action? Well, let's consider, as was mentioned even in the sermonette, a familiar parable in Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. We see that building a house is analogous to building our lives. And there are wise ways to build a house, and there are foolish ways to build a house. Let's consider, in this, again, familiar parable, the house that is built by one with wisdom, the life that is built by one with wisdom. Jesus says in Matthew 7, verse 24, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them." Now we're talking about, again, the application of what we learn, and that is the wisdom in action. When we receive instruction and we act on that instruction, then this is what it's compared to. "I liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock." A wise man does what Jesus instructs and is building his life on a solid foundation. Let's compare this parable to the version of it in Luke chapter 6. Same parable, a little different wording in the account. Luke chapter 6 provides a portion of what we call the Sermon on the Mount, and this is one of those areas of overlap here in Luke chapter 6. Let's begin in verse 46. Luke chapter 6, verse 46. He says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things which I say?" Now, that's a pretty penetrating rhetorical question. It's posed to people in general as part of that Sermon on the Mount. It's a lesson in obedience. The word translated Lord means master or owner, the person that we are responsible to. So Jesus is saying, on the one hand, you acknowledge me as your Lord, as your master, as the one that you are to answer to and to obey, but on the other hand, you ignore me. He's pointing out that discrepancy. So he says, look, whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, not ignores it, not just pays lip service to Jesus, but actually does what he says, "I'll show you whom he is like. He's like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock." This person builds the house in a wise way, using wisdom. He does what needs to be done or what ought to be done. He digs deep to find bedrock to use as the foundation for his home. It takes hard work. There are times most likely when it doesn't seem to be worth it. And you wonder how much more there's going to be, what more it's going to take. But ultimately, he finds the bedrock to use as the foundation for his house. Of course, Jesus Christ is the rock. Jesus Christ is the foundation of our lives. Digging deep implies diligently searching to learn and then to apply what Jesus teaches. A building is only as strong as its foundation. When our lives are built on that solid foundation of obedience to Jesus Christ, then we are on solid ground and we will be able to stand even in the worst of circumstances. That's the parable, that's the analogy that we see here, verse 49. He who heard and did nothing is like a man who built his house on the earth without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great or complete. You know, a house with no foundation looks on the surface just like any other house. It looks like a house that is built on a foundation. The foundation itself is not visible, but it's what the house rests on. It doesn't take nearly as much effort to build a house without, first of all, laying a foundation. It's less expensive, but it doesn't stand. It looks exactly like a house with a foundation until the storms come, until the difficulties arise. And it didn't just fall. It says that it collapsed immediately and completely. What we may look like is not as important as what is in our character, what we are truly like inside, what runs deep in our lives, what really is the direction of the foundation that we build our lives upon. So this is wisdom in action. This is how we apply the understanding, the knowledge, and we exercise prudence to live in a way that reflects godly wisdom. In Matthew, we read that it's a wise person who works hard and builds his life on the solid foundation of obedience. Just like digging a foundation for a house, that kind of obedience is difficult. It takes effort continually. It takes vision and purpose to be willing to do that, to go to that effort. That's undone. That's also something we do very privately. Obedience to God is something that we are responsible for, but it's a very private thing. What we do in private may or may not truly reflect God's teachings and God's way. Those are the choices we make. We can put a show and seem to be the same as someone else who is more diligent, but eventually that's all going to be sorted out. The right approach is wise, and it builds strength to endure the storms and the floods, the hardships of life. So it'll be good for us all to take some time to consider our foundation. Consider whether or not we're truly living up to the opportunities and the wisdom that God offers to us. Am I a superficial Christian? Or do I thoughtfully obey? Is there a crack in my foundation? If there is, water will find it, and it will flood. You know, last sermon we read in Ephesians 5, and I mentioned it earlier just a moment ago, that we should live circumspectly. The Greek word translated circumspectly means a strict conformance to a standard. A strict conformance to a standard. Strict is a word that sounds demanding, it sounds harsh, it sounds unyielding. When I was in second grade, I had a strict teacher. And I didn't really much care for her, but she was an excellent teacher. She knew what we should learn and she knew how we should behave in her classroom. She was a no-nonsense kind of woman. I don't know if a teacher can get away with that anymore, but that's the way it was when I was in the second grade. We need to learn to be honest with ourselves and to obey strictly and carefully. If there are certain parts of our lives where we aren't as strict as we should be, those are the cracks in our foundation. And that's the weakness that will someday be a difficulty for us. So wisdom is that underlying strength that is developed over time by digging deep and working hard. The fact that faith is a gift, I'm sorry, that wisdom is a gift, doesn't mean that it comes easily. But it means that God provides a way for us to earn or to receive, I should say, that gift. Let's go back to James chapter 3. James, the third chapter. James here affirms that application of wisdom that we saw in the parable. James chapter 3, beginning verse 13, says, "Who is wise and understanding among you?" Who is it that has wisdom? Well, here's the proof. "Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom." Wisdom is evidenced by good works and by a humble attitude. Wisdom sometimes is viewed and sometimes expressed in a very carnal and selfish way. People might claim to have certain knowledge or wisdom, but it can be used in a way that's manipulative and controlling. True godly wisdom is simply a matter of the progress you make and the life you build by good works, by obedience. Sometimes work is not an easy word. It's kind of like the word strict. It's hard. It's difficult. It means it takes effort. But work is what it's all about. We have good works, and those who have that quality, or those who work in that way and also have the quality of humility, are the ones who are evidencing wisdom in their lives. And as much as we talk about this, we keep coming back to the same theme, the same basic definition. Wisdom is expressed by obedience and humility. We think maybe of wisdom as being somebody who's really smart, who has all the answers, who can provide a special insight for you. Well, perhaps there are those who in certain areas of life can do that. But true wisdom, godly wisdom, as is described here, is not so much being a know-it-all as being one who personally, privately, consistently obeys God and has that humble heart. The next few verses here in James 3 describe the negative results of denying God's wisdom and of seeking our own and trying to maybe have a human sort of wisdom that is not what comes from God. We can read it here in verse 14. "If you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts," that could be a person who's pretty hardworking and aggressive, but if that is built on ambition and envy and trying to be better than others, well, that's not exercising wisdom at all. Wisdom is humble. Wisdom is obedient to God, not trying to get ahead of others. If you have that kind of ambition or wisdom, don't pride yourselves on that. That puts you in defiance of and false to the truth. Now, we're reading this, by the way, from the Amplified, if it's not following too well in your New King James or your King James. This is the Amplified Bible. Verse 15, "This superficial wisdom is not such as comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, even inspired by Satan's way instead of God's way. For wherever there is envy and selfish ambition," see, that's the opposite of the humble obedience that is described earlier that defines true wisdom. "Where there's envy and ambition, there also will be confusion and all sorts of evil and vile practices." It leads down the wrong path, the wrong way of life. "The counterfeit of wisdom," we continue, "produces jealousy, envy, contention, ambition." Look around again, society in general. That's what you'll find. Not people who are truly humble and obedient to God, but people who are enforcing their own way, who are competitive and selfish. That, the scripture says, is not from God, but from our own nature. Worse yet, is following the way of Satan. And the result is confusion, instability, and evil behavior. Again, reading that passage from the Amplified Bible. So there's a contrast here that's pretty easy to identify. It's pretty easy for us to consider ourselves, consider our motives, and consider what kind of wisdom we are pursuing, whether it's the human wisdom that's led by Satan in his way, or whether it's a godly wisdom of obedience and humility. Hold your place here. Let's go back for a moment to Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14. And we begin in verse 6. You know, it's kind of rare in the book of Proverbs to find a series of verses that are on the same topic. They're usually little short, pithy sayings that move right along each individual sentence. But here we find three or four verses that all relate to the idea of having proper wisdom. Verse 6, Proverbs 14. A scoffer seeks wisdom but doesn't find it. You know, it depends on the attitude and on the heart. The word scoffer is translated from a Hebrew word that means, in a literal sense, to make mouths at. In other words, it means to mock. It means to mimic. It means to make fun of someone. So a scoffer is not sincere. A scoffer is wanting to put himself above others and ridicule others and to mimic or mock who they are. That's what the way a scoffer behaves, and that is not going to lead to wisdom. But knowledge is easy to him who understands. Knowledge comes to those who have the right heart and willingness to learn and to gain wisdom. Verse 8, the wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way. In other words, again, the prudent meaning clear thinking, good judgment. When you exercise that way, then you understand, and you're basing your life on proper understanding of God's way. But the fool's folly, or the folly of fools, is deceit. They fool themselves as much or more than anyone else. Verse 9, fools mock at sin, but among the upright there is favor. Fools make fun of or take lightly sin. But one who is genuine is going to be repentant and upright and able to deal with sin properly. The scoffer, again, is seeking his own way. But those who genuinely seek knowledge and wisdom will find it. Here in this same context, it describes one who seeks his own way rather than seeking godly wisdom. In verse 14, Proverbs chapter 12, verse 14. There's a way that seems right to a man. I'm sorry, it should be Proverbs chapter 12, verse 14. Get those numbers in the right order. Proverbs 14, verse 12. Here we go. There's a way that seems right. There's a human element of wisdom and effort, but it leads in the wrong direction. In fact, it leads to death. So true humility is what is described, or true wisdom is described in James chapter 3. Let's go back then to James 3 again. Back to James 3. Verse 17, James 3, verse 17. Says, but the wisdom that is from above is first of all pure and undefiled. Then it is peace-loving, courteous, considerate. It is willing to yield to reason, full of compassion and good fruits. It is wholehearted and straightforward. It is impartial and unfeigned or genuine. That's a very different list from what we saw in the previous verses. To apply wisdom in our lives is to have these kinds of qualities, characteristics of the wisdom that we are seeking to find. This is the application of wisdom. This is what wisdom in action looks like. Again, we can review this verse. Godly wisdom looks like this. It is evidenced by good works in humility. Godly wisdom is pure and undefiled is genuine. Godly wisdom is peace-loving, not contentious or ambitious. We're trying to get ahead of others, but loving peace. Godly wisdom is considerate. It is reasonable. It is full of compassion. Godly wisdom is wholehearted, straightforward, impartial, and genuine. Godly wisdom has many applications that apply to us in our everyday life and how we relate to one another and how we live our lives, the choices we make. It's a matter of using that good, sound sense and judgment in choosing how we live, and it leads to us becoming skilled at life. So we grow in wisdom, as we have mentioned in a previous message, and we also apply wisdom to grow in it further. As we maintain that listening heart, as we continue to yield to God, then we will be able to grow and gain even more wisdom. Walter Lippmann was an American writer and journalist, political commentator. He just made this statement. It says, it requires wisdom to understand wisdom. The music is nothing if the audience is deaf. So if people don't hear it or don't understand it, then they have to have wisdom to be able to receive and to grow further in wisdom. Proverbs 1 verse 5 says much the same thing. It says it better than Walter Lippmann did. Proverbs chapter 1 verse 5 says that a wise man will hear and increase learning. A man of understanding will attain wise counsel. Another aspect of the application of wisdom is to continue to seek wisdom, to continue to grow in wisdom. And in doing so, then we are, of course, going to be achieving and living our lives, building that house, that life on the solid rock. Now we know that Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived. What happened to Solomon? We know how his life turned. Why did it turn that way? Let's go back and look at a couple of verses here that talk about Solomon's life. It's a sad story. It's a story of, it's a story of failure, from riches to rags, of losing the incredible blessings that were given to him. How did that happen? 2 Chronicles chapter 7. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 15. We're kind of breaking into the middle of this. It's kind of a warning that's given to Solomon about the choices that he would make and what would be the consequences of it. Let's break in at verse 15. It says, now my eyes, God is speaking to, revealing this to Solomon, now my eyes will be open and my ears attentive to prayer made in this place. He's talking about the dedication of the temple. God will hear the prayers that are given, that go up to him from that location. For now I've chosen and sanctified this house, that my name may be there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. That's his promise about the temple that was built in his honor and for the worship of him. Verse 17, as for you, this is direct now to Solomon, if you walk before me as your father David walked, and do according to what I've commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom as I covenanted with David your father, saying, you shall not fail to have a man as a ruler in Israel. This was the promise that was extended to Solomon. It not only was given wisdom as a special gift, an understanding heart as we understand that to mean, but he also was given this assurance, this promise, that if you live like your father did, then your family will never lack a man to sit on the throne. But, verse 19, if you turn away and forsake my statutes and my commandments, which I've set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will uproot them from my land. The punishment would be not only on Solomon, but the consequence would fall on the nation as well, for Solomon turning away from God. And I know that you are familiar with the story. That is just about exactly what happened over time. They turned away from God. Solomon himself did as well. Drop down to verse 1 here in chapter 8, just to get a kind of a sense of the passing of time. It says, it came to pass at the end of 20 years when Solomon had built the house of the Lord in his own house. So 2 decades have passed. And Solomon at this point apparently is still receiving blessings that God had promised to him. Verse 16 in chapter 8. All the work of Solomon was well ordered from the day of the foundation of the house of the Eternal until it was finished. Solomon exercised wisdom in the way that he built the temple. And he did it carefully and thoroughly and properly. Apparently he stayed on track for at least 20 years after God had put him in that position. And he became known, you can read in chapter 9, how he became known throughout all the world for his great wisdom, and other kings and leaders came to him to have their difficult questions answered, maybe some of the problems they were dealing with in their nations untangled, and Solomon would help them and straighten them out. What happened? Well, what happened was he began to turn away from the wisdom that God had granted to him. He turned against and rejected God's way for his own way. Wisdom is something we can have, we can build, but we have to understand that if we're not careful, we can also lose that wisdom. We can lose the connection we have to God. We can become foolish. 1 Kings chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4, breaking again into this context. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4, for it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart to other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Eternal, his God. Solomon was warned not to marry women from other cultures and religions, because they would turn his heart. He ignored the instruction. He ignored the wisdom. And he sought after that, that for his life. In fact, in such an incredible way, it's hard to believe. He had 700 wives and princesses and 300 concubines. That'd be pretty tough to keep track of. That'd be pretty selfish. It shows his frame of mind was to collect these things that he valued, that he treasured, that he wanted, rather than to treasure God's wisdom that he had given to him. And we know that he lost that wisdom. He lost that edge. And he lost the kingdom as a result. His own son, Rehoboam, was also foolish in the way that he handled the throne when he became the king. The king, Solomon, lived in a way that ruined his life because he didn't continue to exercise it. He didn't look for the wisdom. He became distracted by his own desires and what he wanted to enjoy, what he thought was the better way. Wisdom is not permanent. If we choose to not continue to seek it from God. Consider a couple of verses here in Ecclesiastes. You know, we look at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, and it's possible that Solomon at least somewhat recovered from this mistake that he made in turning away from God. He at least concludes his book by emphasizing the importance of obedience to God. But to look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Look at how his mind changed when he lost the wisdom that God had given to him. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 12. This chapter, he's talking about all the things he experimented with to try to find good, try to make his life seem worthwhile. He had all this wealth, and he was looking for ways to use that wealth for him to gain satisfaction and to have a purpose in life. But of course, he didn't find it. So verse 12, he says, then I turned to myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. He's looking now to see what value was wisdom to him. For what man can do who succeeds the king, only what he's already done? One of Solomon's frustrations was that he knew that when he was gone, somebody else was going to be the king, and nothing that he did would matter. That was his perspective. And so what difference does it make, is what he's asking. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as much as light excels darkness. So we had that right. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I perceived that the same event happens to them all. He recognized the difference between wisdom and foolishness, but what bothered him was that, look, we're all going to die. Whether we're wise or foolish, we're going to die. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? What difference did it make in my life to have wisdom when it all ends the same way, whether I exercise wisdom or foolishness? So I said in my heart, this is pointless. This is vanity. This was his own human reasoning that he began to look to or to rely upon when he gave up on and turned away from obedience to God. He wound up stuck in this really strange circle that wisdom is good, but wisdom doesn't do any good. Wisdom has no lasting value. That's what he concluded. So it's something for us to at least consider, to keep in mind, to realize that we have God's wisdom, we have access to it, but there's also a way, if we turn away from it, that we can lose that wisdom if we don't continue to apply it and don't continue to seek for it. In Ecclesiastes, by the way, chapter 10, I won't take the time here, but what might be worth taking time to read and study more carefully, because chapter 10 in Ecclesiastes could be another chapter in Proverbs. He's talking about wisdom, the qualities of it, the importance of it, and the value of it here in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. And so it's a good chapter to read, and again, a consideration of what true wisdom is and how God will open up our minds to that wisdom if we seek it from him. One more thing that we want to consider about wisdom before we conclude this afternoon. There's going to be a time in the future when it will be absolutely critical to have the wisdom and the understanding that we need. There'll be a time in the future, whether it occurs in our lifetime is not necessarily certain, but there's going to be a time when wisdom is going to be absolutely essential. Not that it isn't in daily life today, but even more so in these times at the end of the age. Daniel chapter 12, verse 10. Daniel chapter 12, verse 10. We know that Daniel was given prophecies, and he was told in verse 9, well, verse 8, Daniel was asking what the meaning was of the prophecy that had been revealed to him. That's in verse 8, verse 9. And he was told, Daniel, go your way, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly. In other words, time is going to pass. There are going to be evil people. There are going to be obedient people. Time is going to go on. But the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand, but the wise shall understand. Those who have wisdom, those who are being led properly by God, those who are submitting to him, those who are exercising the application of wisdom as we've been talking about, will have an understanding that will be very important, in fact, necessary at the end of the age. Wisdom will be critically important. The wise will know and will understand what is happening, what they need to do, how God is working and be able to keep things in order, in context, and to recognize what is taking place. That's a wisdom that will be necessary at the end of the age, and a wisdom that we will certainly need. As we build wisdom in our lives now, then we're going to be able to have that kind of understanding if it comes to that point in our lifetime. Matthew 24, verse 26. Matthew 24, verse 20. Well, let's begin back in verse 23. Verse 23. We just read in verse 22 that that God will intervene so that the days will be shortened, so that flesh will be saved on the earth. Verse 22. Verse 23. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. And then he says in verse 25, it's kind of a, I told you so, in the future tense. He says, I'm telling you this beforehand, so that we'll be aware of it. I think it's important for us to not simplify the deception that Satan will exercise at the end of the age. All of the world, it says in Revelation 13, will be deceived by the great false prophet. All of the world, except those whose names are written in the book of life. It says here that these deceptions are going to be so strong, so powerful, these miracles will appear to be so real that if possible, it would even confuse the elect. The elect are the wise. The elect are those who are exercising God's way carefully. The elect are those who have chosen and been faithful, called and chosen and faithful. They will not be confused by what's happening, but others will. And if we, we'll put it positive, we need to stay careful ourselves and grow in the proper form of wisdom so that we will not be one of those even drawn into Satan's deception. Again, it's kind of hard to understand just exactly how this is going to play out. If they say Christ is here or Christ is there, is that meaning that they think Christ has returned? Or maybe they're meaning that this is where Christ is working, with this group or with that group or with this, in this way. And people will be drawn into it. Maybe that's the way that the deception will unfold at the end. Others will be apparently claiming that Christ has already returned. Verse 26, if they say to you, look, he's in the desert, don't go out looking for him. You know, it's going to be a very subtle, powerful deception that Satan will bring on mankind at the end of the age. And we can't just say, well, I know when the Sabbath is, and I know when the holy days are, and I don't eat pork hot dogs. That's not what it comes down to. It's having the wisdom and exercising the wisdom so that, as Daniel put it, we will understand, or as it says in Daniel, we will understand when things unfold as they are going to. So if we live in that age, we certainly are going to need to have that level of wisdom. We need to be working toward that and building our life on it now, so that we will have that wisdom when it comes right down to it. Wisdom has so many different facets to it. There's so much that Scripture says about it, so many examples. It's basically, it's the fundamental characteristic that we need to be developing and growing in. Valuable to us because by wisdom, you'll save your life because you'll have the understanding, the direction, and you'll know how to deal with different situations as they arise. Your house will stand in those times of severe storms and difficulties. Let's conclude back in Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4. We all want to be, we all need to be skilled at life. There are some things we can learn and that we do learn through experience. Many of them may be more physical, less significant. There are things we learn by doing and by having experience. But when we seek God's wisdom and apply that to our lives, that is the kind of wisdom that is most important and that will ultimately save our lives. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 5. Get wisdom. Get understanding. As we started with, find wisdom. Seek it out, dig for it, pray for it, apply it so you'll continue to grow in it. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget, do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Kind of ironic, I suppose, maybe it's Solomon who actually wrote this passage, talking or writing to his son. And yet he, in his later years, did exactly that. He forgot and he turned away. It's a pretty strong lesson. Don't forget, don't turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will preserve you. Love wisdom, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, and in all you're getting, get understanding. Understanding is that application of the wisdom that God will share with us. Again, we all need to be and want to be skilled. To know how to live life, to know how to make the decisions, the big ones, the little ones, it's based on our willingness to seek wisdom from God and apply it in our lives. And wisdom is what will save our lives.